My name is Colin Daniels, and I'm the Working Age and Young People Service Manager for the Macular Society.
I'm Richard Kirk, and I'm the Chief Executive of Polyphotonics, and we developed treatment for diabetic eye disease.
Hi there, I'm Christy Moore. I'm the Deputy Programme Manager for the Arden, Herefordshire and Worcestershire Diabetic Eye Screening Programme.
Hiya, I'm Bavini. I'm the Eye Care Liaison Officer at Solihull Hospital, but I work for RNIB.
I think, can we just start with the eye screening? Can you just talk about a bit about how eye screening works for people living with diabetes, how often they get screened?
Yeah, sure. So at the moment it's every year to 2 years, depending on the patient results, that they'll be invited to diabetic eye screening. When they're newly diagnosed, the GP will refer to us. We'll invite them in, and they're seen every year to 2 years.
And what sort of things are you looking for on an eye screen?
So what we look out for is we're predominantly diabetic retinopathy. So as you know, when diabetic, there can be damage to the back of the eye. So we're just looking out for any damage to the back of the eye called diabetic retinopathy or maculopathy. And if we see it, we can refer them to where they need to go, or we can keep them in what we call a digital surveillance pathway, where we can keep an eye on them a little bit closer, so every 3 to 6 months. And also we're just moving into 24-month recalls. Predominantly we did do, it's 12 months recall, but if someone has a negative result, 2 in a row, they're going to move on to 24-month recalls, so seen every 2 years.
And the process, if you can just tell us what happens if people are a bit worried about going for their first screening.
So yeah, of course. So we'll invite them in. We've actually got a new patient portal where patients can now scan a QR code or go on a link. They can schedule their appointments, rearrange, they can actually access their results, download them on there and see their images online on our new patient portal, and that's accessible via their NHS login. We're trying to be more environmentally friendly, cut down on our postage and paper usage moving forward. We are still sending out paper letters at the moment for those who may not want to be online just yet, but for those who are willing, it's all online for them. As it stands at the moment, we invite people in for their diabetic eye screening. We'll run through lots of questions with them, basic brief background on their eye health and their diabetes. And we'll start with a visual acuity test. We'll put some tropicamide eye drops in, which is going to dilate their pupils. And then we will let them wait for about 15 to 20 minutes, bring them back in, photograph 2 of each eye, or more if needed. There's something called 7 fields photography, which is going to roll out over October, November. And that's so we can see all the 7 quadrants of the eye. And we can then keep more patients in our program and reducing the amount that are being referred to the eye hospital. Then once we've got the photography, these will be then graded by our grading team. So we have an in-house grading team and a corporate grading team who will look at the images, and different levels of grading. So this could be all the way up to sort of referral outcome graders who will refer to the hospital, sometimes for non-diabetic retinopathy, and predominantly what we are looking for is features of diabetic retinopathy, and we will refer that onto the eye hospital. And that's it. They'll get their results either in the post, or if they've accessed it by the portal, they'll get it from there. So that's
brilliant.
Us in a nutshell.
So just, Colin, if you want to just talk about the Macular Society and what that's doing for people who are struggling with their eyesight, maybe, and can you describe what macular problems there can be?
So the Macular Society supports everybody with any type of macular disease, including diabetic macular edema. So we're predominantly a support organisation, but we also fund research, and they're equal streams really. So each year we fund, sort of this year we funded up about £3 million worth of new research into macular disease, both treatments and cures, and prevention, alongside technology and things like that. And also along with that, it's equally as important to give people up-to-date information about all different types of macular disease, and offer peer support. So we've got a helpline which people can call and just get good advice, good strong advice around how to manage their macular disease and what to expect of it, because it can be quite daunting. Now, the majority of people who acquire macular disease are older people who acquire age-related macular disease later on in life. But we do have younger people as well, so people with diabetes can have macular edema, a diabetic macular edema, which can creep up on them quite quickly, and which can be very scary. So we offer lots and lots of information and good quality information around how to manage that condition, and not just the physical side of it, but the emotional side as well. So we have a counselling service that people can utilise. It's a telephone counselling service which people can call, refer themselves on the website or through the helpline. And these are registered counsellors who can talk them through the emotional impact of that as well. Alongside that, we have a massive network of peer support groups, mostly for older people with AMD, but we also have some groups for working age people. But in particular, for this event today, we have a diabetic macular edema support group, which is actually online and facilitated by Bernie, who's fantastic. And they meet once a month on Zoom, and it's just a place where people can get together and talk about their concerns around their condition, share experiences and hints and tips. I do sort of all sorts of different things, but my main role is from a working age perspective, is to talk people through their employment rights. So if people are starting to struggle at work, they can bring me up and I can talk them through their options, whether that's to stay in work or what they can do people can expect as a reasonable adjustment from employers. I can also talk them through access to work and how to make a successful claim. But I'm a bit of a one-man army, really. So what I try and do is I make phone calls around the country to find organisations that can help people on their doorstep with things like personal independence claims and other benefit claims. Otherwise, I'd be inundated. I'd just be doing form fills all the time. I don't do that anymore. But it's just about giving people the right advice and the right support at the right time to help them manage their condition. One of the things that we do, as I say, is research, and we do research into all areas of macular disease. And so we have funded some research into macular edema, and we were part of the team that started the injections, and we advocated for those injections. So if people are struggling to get the right injection at the right time, we've got an advocacy service through the helpline that can advocate for people to get the injection when they need it. So that's us in a nutshell.
That's amazing amount of work. And just come and talk about what the RNIB can offer as support, and then we'll come and talk to Richard about the amazing research that Polyphotonics is doing. So yeah, the sort of stuff that people can get through the RNIB.
So at RNIB, Royal National Institute of Blind, we offer a range of services and products to patients diagnosed with eye conditions or living with vision impairment. The support available ranges from sight loss advice service, from general eye condition information to information about diabetic retinopathy. So we've got a dedicated eye health team. We've also got dedicated other services like technology support team, peer support, counselling, benefits advice team. There's also activities and community connect that we've got in each local community as well. So patients can reach out to the community connect who can advise them about the local, so that they're preventing any isolations and any kind of information they're seeking that can help them retain their independence. That's where RNIB come. We are alongside of that. My role is an eye care liaison officer. So each hospital or your local sight loss charity may have their own eye care liaison officers. Our roles are non-medical, but we are there to provide any kind of information and support to patients under that area, catchment area, or under that falls under the hospital. relating to their vision. Also, we provide support with the certifications. If a doctor's advised that a patient can be certified, we carry out the process and facilitate the certification and explain the process to them. So that's where we the eye care liaison officers, we are trying to build a pathway at the moment where patients are picked up from the start of their eye care journey so that they can be supported through from the beginning of when they've been diagnosed and referred to however long they need, because everyone is different and not everyone's condition is experiences are the same. But that's our NIV.
Brilliant. So over to you, Richard, really. So we can just talk about polyphotonics and the Noctura that you've got here today and how that works, how that helps people.
It's a deceptively simple treatment for diabetic retinopathy. It takes the form of a mask that you wear at night. And I suppose that's one of its beauties, its success, because it is really incredibly simple, but sometimes people think it's too simple to really work. They don't quite understand it. It works on the principle that when we go to sleep at night, the different photoreceptors behave in different ways. And we dark adapt, and this is, you know, we've done this through evolution. It's only really in the last 100 years we've had electric lights, and we haven't needed to dark adapt. Anyway, when we dark adapt, counterintuitively, the oxygen demand in the retina increases dramatically. So even though you're asleep, your retina is going hyperactive, and it's asking for more and more oxygen. And when it does that, we get neovascularization, new vessel growth in the retina. And this is the problem. So everybody dark adapts, but if you're diabetic, neovascularization, new vessels in the retina are compromised and weak. And that is one of the causes of diabetic retinopathy. We start to get bleeds, we get cysts, we get these, you know, this is happening in the retina. We start to get the thickening in the retina and we get edema. So we're really at heart a bunch of physicists, and we understand light very well, and we come from a physics sort of material science background. And we came across the hypothesis that hypoxia was the driver for the upregulation of VEGF, which is what the injections do. They count, you know, they're anti-VEGF injections. So we worked out that if we could suppress dark adaptation in the retina using light, then we could, in effect, we're telling the brain, you're not asleep. Now, that was the hypothesis, and we've spent the last sort of 10 years researching it. There's been 1.7 million hours of patient use, recorded patient use, doing this. And we've been largely funded through the NHS and various bits of the NHS. They've put in many, many millions into funding this. So we have this mask, you wear it at night, it's very simple. It suppresses dark adaptation, and by doing that, we in effect, in layman's terms, we're taking the stress out of the retina. And in all our clinical trials, well, the most recent clinical trial, which was an NHS clinical trial run at St. Peter's near London, 96% of patients in the trial saw clinical improvement. But not only did they see clinical improvement, but we measure visual acuity and all of these things. And all of the patients except one eye didn't see an improvement in acuity, but all of the eyes saw visual improvements up to 25 letters. And 25 letters is astonishing. That's sort of three lines on the chart. So real improvements in acuity. Now, one of the other things is we take a lot of care and attention about is a treatment can only give benefit if a patient can use it. And that's really important. So we do a lot of post-clinical analysis about how did you find the eye? How did you find the mask? Was it comfortable? Was it easy to wear? Because if a mask is difficult to wear, patients are just not going to wear it. It's not a treatment. And again, we find, I think it's 87% of patients found the mask extremely comfortable and would wear it and would recommend it and all of these things. So it's extremely effective. Now, what we've found is we have trials that are relatively early and trials that are relatively late. By definition, it's very difficult to run a trial with people who have edema because you cannot say, don't take an injection. So that's a difficult trial to run. But our sweet spot for trials tends to be working with diabetic screening, when they're M1 and they're moving to 3 month regular intervals, yeah. and you know, natural history tells us that these patients will get injected within 12 months, and we can define that and we know who they are, that's when the mask is absolutely perfect in terms of NHS use. And again, I'll refer to another trial. We've been monitoring the patients in this trial for 5 years post-trial, and they were all M1s, and not a single one has gone on to an injection in 5 years, and they were all M1s, which is amazing. So, and thinking about the other treatments that are available today, well, we have laser, which is heroic to say the least, because we know it damages receptors, and they don't rejuvenate. And we know that if you receive a lot of laser interventions, then you're going to have problems with nighttime vision and other things. And then the injections are, they're very potent, they are successful, but they're extremely expensive. And obviously they don't work for everybody, and people come out as non-responders, but the cost means that naturally healthcare systems around the world, not just the UK, but around the world, wait until eyesight is compromised. We wait until you've got an edema before we inject. So that's great. Now, we're working on NHS adoption, and we all know the NHS, and that's a challenge, and it takes time, but we're working on it, and we're very hopeful we'll get a wider adoption very soon. And we're well connected to the NHS. We're working with lots of different hospitals across the country. But we are also selling it privately to patients who I suppose there's a fair portion of diabetic patients who are highly educated about their disease. And they know about the eye disease, and they know about what's going to happen, and they're extremely concerned. So, if they can buy it privately. And then we're working on a wider adoption. So that's the Noctura 400. A very simple mask, but really effective.
And it's disposable. It lasts so long, yeah?
Well, the mask is quite clever, because we worked out years ago that, in effect, we're running sleep trials. And sleep trials tend to rely on diaries, but we all lie. We all lie to our doctors. And if we're filling in a diary, after 3 months, it's probably a work of fiction. So the mask actually monitors patient use really precisely. And we get a whole data set that tells the physician, the doctor, the person who's prescribing, if it's working or not. But mostly, really importantly, it tells the patient whether it's working. So the patient can correlate, they get graphs, they correlate their use to the effectiveness of the mask, which is really powerful. So we have a 3 month timer on it. So the mask turns on at a particular date, and in 3 months it will turn off. And then you need to replace the mask. And we've kept to that because we found that healthcare systems around the world work on 3 month cycles, particularly ophthalmology. And so it fits in with the ophthalmology cycle, but also it means that the mask will get replaced, because you would be amazed at the amount of people who don't change a mask. They wear it every night and it gets filthy and it's got to be changed. And we want the data to be ripped out of the mask as well, so we can share it with the patient and the doctor and everybody. So at the moment it's the 3 month cycle, so you wear 4 masks a year.
And what sort of price are you looking at if you want to self-fund?
Well, the private price is £250 for 3 months, which works out at less than a cup of coffee a day. It's just less than £3 a day. Because it is a lot of money to a lot of people, and we understand, and again with a lot of diabetics, they might not be in work, they do struggle and all of those things. But when you look at it as less than a cup of coffee, it sort of puts it in perspective. There are discounts if people can go online and you get £50 off your first one. You can also subscribe for about £79 a month, which is a lot less than £3 a day. And then when we think about the cost to the NHS, well, injections, we know they're very expensive, and on average, it varies a little bit, but on average, you're looking at something in the order of £6,000 per eye per year. Our mask is about £1,000. So the NHS have their own business plans and their own health economic models, and it would save the NHS hundreds of millions a year. But that's the other challenge. We need to work with different kinds of budgeting and, different perspectives and things like that.
Fantastic. Anything else anybody wants to add?
Well, I would just like to add, it's Bavini from our RNIB. We do, apart from what we've discussed, we do provide Living Well with Sight Loss courses as well. So any patients or families affected with diabetes or retinopathy or any eye conditions, the Living Well with Sight Loss looks at the different aspects of managing day-to-day tasks and living with sight loss, and it just gives you another angle how to manage. Also, it's an opportunity to speak with other people that are diagnosed with the condition and learn new skills and ways of working together and attaining new skills. Alongside of that, like treatment, if patients are under any hospital and they need any kind of advocacy on behalf of their because of the treatment, that's where the eye care liaison officers once again can come into play as well. But yeah, any kind of support, employment, if you're working, legal, any kind of support, that's where RNIB would come in.
Fantastic.
I just wonder a sort of closing question about the importance of being here or benefits of being
here. So this is an annual event, and we're in Kenilworth in the Midlands. We try and bring it to as many people as possible by being in the middle of the country. What can you all just give me your thoughts on why this sort of event is so important? Start with you, Colin.
Well, patient information, however it's delivered, is empowerment, actually. So whether you're talking about organisations like the Macular Society, RNIB, Guide Dogs, and organisations that fund treatments and things like that, the more information a patient can have about how to manage their condition, the better people are. And the more people that can come to events like this means that the more people get empowered. And one more thing we do find is sometimes people will take a leaflet away from an event like this because they're interested in it, and they might not read it for 3 months, and they might pick it up and then call the helpline because they've picked something up 3 months ago or 4 months ago or 5 months ago. Because sometimes when people have a condition and they've acquired it, actually they hide from it for quite a long time. So events like this actually encourage people to get information and actually embrace their condition and sort of deal with the emotional side as well as the physical side. I'm going to add our helpline number, if you want to call the Macular Society, is 0300 30 30 111. So feel free if you've got a macular edema, just to give the Macular Society a call as well.
Lovely. And Richard, you've been to these events before, I think, haven't you?
Yes, we've been to a few. I think for us it's about know your patient. That's what it's really about. We do attend Village Hall. You know, diabetics are very good at creating small communities, help support teams. So we do turn up at Village Halls. We turn up at, sometimes in the back of a supermarket somewhere, and they're meeting. But we always learn something from the patient. And although, you know, when we look at the data, it's numbers and things like this, it's the patient stories and their little life stories. And, you know, they're talking about, sometimes they're talking about fathers and mothers, and also about themselves. And we always pick up something, and we always think, okay, that's how we communicate to the patient. That's how we, you know, we understand what they're going through. And you were talking earlier, Colin, about, you know, people get really scared. Really scared. I mean, eyes is one of the big things. Pain, cancer, and eyes. Those are the big things. And eyes are terrible. So, yeah, it's the chance to talk to our patients. Fabulous.
And peer support is important, isn't it? And you find telling people a little bit more about what they can expect helps.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is my first year here in health. I think Birmingham diabetic eye screening program are here last year, but for me and Anna, it's our first one here, and we are just truly blown away of just the amount of support that's out there for diabetic patients. So for us being here today, it's fantastic not only to network with other people here and other companies, and just to see what brilliant work is out there and support. And it will help us as well to signpost any patients that do come in, that we can say, here we go, we've got some information for this or that. So it's absolutely mind-blowing just the amount of support that's out there. And like you say, yeah, giving that support for patients that are coming in of what to expect at their next appointment. We've had a young girl who was just about to have her first screening and didn't know what to expect and has asked the question. So it's nice to be able to, especially at that young age, of sowing the seed for their diabetic journey, because I'm a big advocate that education is the way forward for patients with diabetes, and really sowing that seed throughout their entire diabetic, it's going to be a lifelong thing for them. So educating them right at the start will help them along the way. And sometimes we have come across, you know, there are gaps in people's education, which is why maybe they don't access the help that's out there, or their, you know, their foot clinics or their eye screening. So just being here today, myself and Anna, it's truly just mind-blowing, and thank you so much for having us.
Absolute pleasure. And you've talked about so many services and signposting, so for you as well.
Yeah, so this is my first visit with my colleague Liz, who works in the RE team. But for us to be here, it Christy said, it gives an opportunity to network with other professionals. But from the nature of the role that I do as an eye care liaison officer, I see a lot of patients that have got diabetic related conditions, and for them it's the understanding of going from the hospital, the lack of understanding, and being able to speak to someone. So being here will allow us not only for families to try SimSpec stimulation glasses, which can give them an idea of what the person's living with, but also give a bit more information about what diabetes is, what support's available to them. For us, it's putting the patient first and what their needs, and being here helps to identify, and especially with most of the diabetes being affecting ethnic minority, which we get to see a lot of at the hospital, seeing a lot of other organisations can really help me signpost our patients to the right services and support them in the best possible way. So thank you once again for inviting us as well.
Absolute pleasure, and thank you all for taking part in this.
Thanks for listening to this Living with Diabetes special podcast report from United Through Diabetes 2024, presented by Claire Levy and brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation.